Okay. Let's go to Revelation chapter 11. Revelation 11. We're still in our interlude between the sixth and the seventh trumpet. John's style of writing here. He's shown us this over and over again. He'll go through the series of God's judgments, and then he'll bring us more information. This is a very quick, I think, very quick release of information, in the sense that we've already gone, in chronologically, we've already gone through halfway of the tribulation period. So we're at the midway point. And he's going to talk, he's going to show us some things that are going to take place, I believe, that have to happen at the beginning of the tribulation period, but it brings us right up to where we are chronologically also. Okay, and that'll be some of the people we're going to meet this morning. So he begins with the 11th chapter by talking about the temple. And so here's what he says. Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there." Okay, so there's some things that even common sense tells us has to happen by the midway point. By the midway point, there must be a temple. Why must there be a temple? Well, you can't measure something that doesn't exist. Okay. The second thing, why must there be a temple? Because Jesus' own prophecy was that the Antichrist at the midway point of the tribulation period would cease the sacrifices in the temple and go into the temple and do the abomination of desolation. He professed himself, proclaimed himself to be God and require worship. So there has, by the midway, I always say that by the midway point, there has to be a temple. This picture I have up here for you is done by the Temple Institute in Jerusalem. I got this on my second trip there. I love the ink drawing and stuff. And this is the temple as it would have looked. This is Herod's temple, the temple in time of Christ. Okay, beautiful temple, a lot of stonework, all that, those kind of things. Right now, this wall right here that you see right here, probably a little section, about a real small section right there, is what's known as the Wailing Wall. Now, all this has been excavated now. When I went here, all you could see was a little bit of this. Now this all has been excavated all the way back. This building back here is the Antonia. That's where the Romans were. That's where Pilate was. That's where they took Christ, and that's where they beat him before he headed to Calvary. And they set it right here over the temple so they could look over the temple wall and watch what the Jews were doing. Okay, these are the southern steps. This is the Mount of Olives behind here. Okay, these are the southern steps. These still exist there today. You can sit on these steps. We do. We sit on these steps and we have a teaching right there. Okay? It's right in this area where Jesus would have cast out the money changers and stuff. Because when the people would come in, they would come in these steps right here, go through this gate, come up through these things right here, give their sacrifices to the priest, and then they would exit out this gate right here. In other words, it'd be like a big circle of people going through here, especially on feast days. I mean, you're talking about thousands and thousands of people. Okay? So they would go in there and they would do that. Well, the money changers and those who sold like doves and animals and stuff like that to people, because people maybe came from a long journey and they didn't want to bring those animals with them, well, they would buy them here. But they would also change the money. And the reason they would change the money is because the temple only allowed certain monies to be used, to be given to the temple. You would not, as a Jew, you would never give a Roman coin at the temple. Never. Why? What's the one basic reason why? Look at our own money. What's on our own money? Well, he's on one of them, but what is it? No, what's on our own money that a Jew would be offended by?
Portraits, images.
An image. Okay. I wish I'd have brought one with me. I have them. A shekel. You look at a shekel. A shekel has a one on one side and it has a thing of wheat on the other side. There are no images on Jewish money, because they did not want to break the commandment, "You shall not make for yourself any graven images." So all the Roman money is much like our money. Whoever was Caesar, his face was on whatever money there was. Okay? So this, I'm trying to explain why the money changers were there. They were there because these people would be in a, this was a Roman province, although, you know, Israel was a Roman province, and so they would have to use Roman money in order to live and survive there. The money changers were here to exchange the unclean money, if you will, for the proper money. The problem was they were cheating people. Not only were cheating people there, but they were also selling animals to be sacrificed. The people could take the animals in to be sacrificed, and they would sell them. They would overcharge them for the animals, or they would sell them animals that were not fit for sacrifice. This is what Jesus saw, and that's when Jesus became very angry, and he cleared the place. Okay, so that's a little explanation on all of that. So this was a holy place. Now, right now, up here is pretty well just all flat. I'll put this down because I don't want to feel. Okay, this is all flat right here. But right, sitting about right here is a mosque. Sitting right here is a mosque. Okay, it is an active mosque. It's the Islamic people, they meet at this mosque every Friday on their worship day. Okay, the Temple Mount itself is run by the Islam, by the Muslims. Okay, right in the middle of this same area is what you see, the pictures, the big dome, big gold dome. It sits right in the middle. Okay, right in the middle. Notice where the temple sits. It does not sit in the middle. Does not sit toward the front. It actually sits toward the back. The front of the temple, the entrance of the temple, is facing east. Okay, this little tunnel right here, you see it right there? Mm-hmm. Okay, that would be the entrance place for Caiaphas in Jesus' time. He would never enter in here. He would never enter into any of these common places. He would come right underneath here and come right up into the temple proper. They began digging right there a few years ago. The Muslim people heard it and almost started a war right there again. So when you go there now, this whole area, you can walk along here. It's still covered. It's covered with, 2,000 years of stuff. But they've dug a tunnel here. It's called a rabbi's tunnel. And you can walk right past this entranceway. You'll see it's all sealed up. You can't get back in there. Okay, so that's what that looks like. And one of the reasons I brought this for you is now I want you to see what John is called to do. This is Herod's temple. Before Herod's temple, there was Zerubbabel's temple. Now, what Herod did, Zerubbabel's temple was never destroyed. Herod came in and I want to use the word renovate, but he really didn't renovate. I mean, he went all out. He was a master builder. He was an incredible builder. He built a lot of the stuff. So, but this is considered the second temple. Although Zerubbabel's temple existed before this one, this is the upgrade. I'm just going to put it that way. The first temple was Solomon's temple. It was completely destroyed by the Babylonians. This temple was completely destroyed by the Romans in AD 70. And as Jesus said, not one stone was left upon another. Because they put fire to Jerusalem, all the gold within the temple melted. It went down between the cracks of the rocks. The Roman soldiers dismantled the temple to get to the gold that was in the cracks of the rocks. What a coincidence, right? How did Jesus know they would do that 40 years before they did it? So, all right. So, here's what he says. He says, I want you to take a rod, a measuring rod or reed. One translator says that reed is a measuring instrument that John would have understood in his day. It measures about 10.5 feet. Okay, maybe we would use it like we would say today. We'd say yardstick. Well, everybody here knows what a yard. Well, we don't really know because now it's a meter stick. We're all messed up with all this stuff. But we used to say yardstick. So this reed was about 10.5 feet, and God wanted him to use this to measure the temple. But notice what he says is there in verse 2. He says, "But leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles." Okay, let's stop there. And I want to just draw this for you here from above, what it looks like in that picture from above, okay? By the way, this right here, this is what's called Solomon's porch. It was just a resting place. There's nothing extra special about it, just part of the building thing. There's not holy or anything about that. Okay? So the temple, look, and this would be north. Boy, that don't look right, does it? That'd be south. This would be west. This would be east. Here's where the Wailing Wall is down here. Here are your steps that are right here. Okay? A Mount of Olives. And right here you have the Antonia. That's a Roman thing. Okay? So the temple set here like this. Around the temple, there is another. Okay? And then you have the general area. What the angel instructs John to do is to measure not all of this, which would be considered when the Old Testament said the temple, it always broke it down. This all was considered to be the temple area. And again, Jesus cleaned out here, actually, right on the edge of it, and he said, "This is my Father's house." Okay, you know, the holy place, the holy of holy. But what God has instructed John to do is to measure. But all he told him to measure in this case is this area right here. Okay, why? Well, the answer is given for you. He said, "For it has been the other area has been given to the Gentiles." So we come to today. If the temple is going to be rebuilt right here. We come to today, then right here what you have is a Dome of the Rock. And what you have right here is an active Islamic mosque. There are many people who believe, and I happen to agree with them, that part of what Antichrist will do, the most incredible thing he will be able to do, is that at the very same time, for a period of time, you will have on the same Temple Mount, the rebuilt temple, Dome of the Rock, and an active mosque. That doesn't calculate too much. So how could he do that? That's part of the mystery of and the charisma of this guy. That I believe that's part of the covenant that is spoken of in Daniel chapter 9. That he's going to make it possible for this to be. Now again, this makes sense to me because John is told that this outer part here is given to the Gentiles. In Jesus' time, this was all. Now, the Gentiles could come up. It's hard to see. You can see that the inner place right here, okay, which is what is right here, okay? This inner place right here. Only the Jewish men could go in here. Outside of that, there was another place here. It's hard to see it up here. You can look at it later. The Jewish women could go in there, but they could not go any further. But outside of that, Gentiles could go up on the Temple Mount, but they could not go inside this one area. Everybody got that? So it was all holy unto the Jewish people in Jesus' time. They did allow Gentiles who desired to go up there and worship. They were allowed to do that. But they could get no closer than this curtain right here. Women could go into the court of women, but they could get no closer than this wall right here. And men who are ready to could go inside this area right here, but of course they couldn't go into the holy place or the holy of holies. Okay? So it's sort of built like that. Boom, 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 where you come in. Yes, Maxine.
What did you mean by men who are ready?
Well, outside right here, there are what's called mikvahs. That's where we get our baptismals from. And men were required to ceremonially make themselves ready by dipping in the mikvahs, by purifying themselves, the symbolism of purifying themselves, and they would have to do that before they could enter into this area right here.
They had to be purified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, of course we know that doesn't mean their heart was, but there were ceremonial things that were required. Okay. All right. Any questions on that? You see how this happens here, okay? But what he tells John is, what I want you to measure, John, is basically, I would say, the temple proper and the area that was reserved for the Jewish men. The rest of the area in the time that's coming will be given to the Gentiles. non-Jewish people. And not just that they're allowed to be there, it's given to them. And who's there right now? The Muslims. The Muslims. And he says that they will be able to trample on it for 42, underfoot, for 42 months. 42 months brings you to the halfway point of the tribulation. That's 3.5 years. Okay? So, that's what it's going to look like. Now, I believe the covenant's going to be made, Daniel chapter 9, verse 25 and following. Covenant's going to be made. Israel is going to be able to do something that would have caused war before. That is, rebuild this temple. But I believe they're going to be able to do that. And they're going to be happy to do that, even though, well, happy, accepting, let me put it that way. Even though the Dome of the Rock's there and the mosque is going to be there. Because Antichrist is going to have such pull and the promise of peace. And remember, I believe, again, I'll just throw this, Ezekiel 38 and 39 happens. They've just been invaded by Russia, by Iran, by push, by those things. And God has miraculously rescued them. Again, I believe Antichrist is going to take a lot of credit for that and stuff, because the Jewish people are not going to recognize that it's God's salvation. Okay? They're not going to recognize that. Ezekiel 38 and 39. They're not going to recognize, their eyes won't be open until almost the halfway point, at the halfway point when Antichrist goes in and does the abomination of desolation.
Well, it's kind of technical, but somebody had to build that temple. So are you saying that the Jews and the Muslims built it together using their own separate funds?
Oh, no. No.
I didn't think so. Well, then how is it? In other words, the Jewish people did it, didn't they?
Are you talking about this temple?
Yeah.
Or this temple?
Well, okay, either one of them. Just to get the facts straight.
The fact here is there was no Muslims even in existence at this time.
All right. Then this,
because Islam didn't come into existence until 400 A.D.
Okay, well then this one then. So was it a combination of the two religions?
No. This was wiped clean. Let's go back. This was wiped clean. Debris from the destruction buried this all around. It didn't even look like, it looked like a mound, and you didn't know a wall was here until now they're starting to clean it. You can see the wall there and stuff. This was wiped clean in AD 70. Prior to that, this was all Jewish. AD 70, Rome comes in, the Jews are dispersed. For almost 2,000 years, there's been all kinds of different groups coming through there. Okay? Finally, what happens is the Muslims come and they claim this barren thing for themselves, and they say they make this like Mecca. They make it pretty much their second holy site. They have no claim to it, but they make it their second holy site. Till 1967, the old city of Jerusalem was under the rule of the Arabs. The Jews didn't have it, even though they were established in 1948. It was a 1967 war where they got back the old city of Jerusalem. You go there today, those of you who've been there, you go there today, you still see bullet holes on the old wall where the 67 war, when the 67 war happened. So it's been since 48 God brought Israel back to be a nation. 67, God gave them back what we know to be the old thing. But still today, the Islamic people still administer, if you will, the Temple Mount. So when this happened, I would pretty much guarantee you that, by the way, it was the king of Jordan that paid for this Dome of the Rock.
But that's Muslim, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. 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 And also for this. Jordan paid for both of these things right here, okay? Israel is already raising money to pay for this. They're ready to go. The Temple Institute that did this drawing, they already have the castings for the candlesticks. They've already begun to make the priestly garments. They've already begun to make the instruments that are used in temple worship. They're ready to go. Now they think it's going to, they think, if you ask them, and we talk to them, you know, they said they think it's going to happen where they're going to throw the Muslims off here. It's not going to happen that way. They think they're going to get this whole thing back. Well, John, Revelation tells us they're not going to get this whole thing back. They're only going to get a portion of it back to rebuild their temple. But at the same time, the Gentiles are going to be roaming all over this place. It's not going to be the same as it was in Jesus' time. So, yeah, Maxine, to answer your question, this has been paid for by Islam. This will be paid for by Israel. because Islam will not put a dime into a Jewish temple, that's for sure.
So, in other words, they're carrying out a loan with a loan institution or something?
The money's already raised, from what I understand. And it will take them, they told us, it will take them 5.5 months to build a temple. That's what they're telling us.
After the Six-Day War in 67, when Israel reclaimed, did they turn it over to the Muslims after that? There was a period of time, and then they turned the mound back over to the Muslims.
Yeah, they gave it back. It was again that thought, you know, if we appease them, then they won't cause trouble. And of course, that has not proven to be true in any sense. Okay, but yes, you're right. They when they took this over, they had it for a brief period of time, and then they gave it back.
Tony, and I was just going to add that, like for Maxine, who has not been there, under that Dome of the Rock, it's called Dome of the Rock, because in the time that the Muslims had control of that, there is a rock there in the center that they
decided
that's where. Well, first of all, they said that's where Abraham sacrificed Ishmael. And it's also where Muhammad ascended into heaven.
Yeah.
From there.
Actually, I have been there, but I didn't know all the facts.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is place. This is supposedly Muhammad's ascension place.
So they're not going to let go of that.
And this is also the place where they do teach that Abraham offered Ishmael here. Wasn't Isaac, is Ishmael. There is bedrock that comes up to this floor. This right here is like sandstone or limestone. It's big pieces and it's real flat. They made it that way. But two places bedrock comes up through that limestone. One is here, and one is right back. Well, today this is not here. Okay, so you know today it looks like this moss this, and then right back here, almost right where that. Thanks. That in line with this temple, there's a little dome back here, and underneath that there's bedrock that comes right to the thing, and that's where they think some people still believe that's where the Holy of Holies was, not here, because it's in line with the temple and in line with the drawing of where the Holy of Holies would be. Okay. All right, so there's a lot of information that goes there and stuff, but here's the point. He makes it so clear to me that Antichrist is going to allow the Jewish people to rebuild their temple. By the way, this is not the Lord's temple. Don't be mistaken. This is not the Lord's temple. For them to reestablish the sacrificial system is an abomination in God's eyes itself. You hear what I'm saying? Why? Because Jesus is sacrifice. There's no need for a temple sacrifice. So this is really I call this a tribulation temple. There will be a millennial temple according to Ezekiel, but this is a tribulation temple, and they will reestablish the sacrificial system, and that will be, that's not what God would have done. The sacrifice is paid. Now some people say, well, I read Ezekiel and it looks like there's a sacrificial system there, and there is, but it's a sacrificial system of memoriam, not a sacrificial system of for cleansing. Two different things. Okay? So don't be mistaken. What's going to be happening here, even though God's going to allow it and the Antichrist is not going to, in the tribulation, is not going to be pleasing to God. Okay, but what's going to be worse is what the Antichrist will eventually do when he goes to the temple and says, "I'm God, worship me." So,
I'm sorry. This,
go ahead.
This isn't too off the beaten track, but has there ever been a Christian movement to build a temple in which to worship God? Of course, we couldn't do it because it's owned by Israel. The land is owned by Israel.
There are groups, I would say Christian groups, that are funding the Temple Institute.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yes, there are. And some of them, there are different reasons for them to do it. Some people think if they get enough money, they can usher this in, make it happen. Some of them, I think, are mistaken. They think that somehow Israel's going to get this whole thing back again. I think they're wrong there. Others are mistaken because they hold a dual covenant view of salvation, and they say, well, Israel needs their own temple because we Christians have our own way. Well, the Bible says there's only one way. So there's a lot of motivation. And there are other people that just do it because they love Israel. So there's a lot of motivations there. All right. So they'll tread, verse 2, they will tread on the holy city underfoot for 42 months. And I will give power to my two witnesses. Now, so we have here now two witnesses that are brought. These are new people that are brought onto the scene. I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. Well, you measure that out, that 1,260, the days there, that goes to the 42 months. Okay, the 42 months is the halfway point. You say that doesn't quite work out with the 365, and it won't work out with the 365 because 365 is a Gregorian calendar, which did not exist when this was written. This is established by the lunar calendar. The lunar calendar has 30 days in each of the 12 months. 30 days in each of the 12 months gives you 360 days, not 365 days. Okay, you work that on out and you add that up, and you will come to 3.5 years according to the lunar calendar. Maxine?
In one of my Bible studies I had on this, the question arose, were those two witnesses Moses and Elijah, since mm-hmm. they were prophets and they were prophesying?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Oh.
We'll talk about that. That's a good question. There's a lot. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute before we go down that road, because there's a whole lot of different things we can talk about with that. But so anyways, I just want you to get the timing there. You say, well, if I divide 3.5 years by the 365, it doesn't come out this number of days. You divide it by 360 and it comes out to this number of days, because again, we're talking lunar calendar, not the Gregorian calendar. Sandy.
So when exactly do they come into in the?
I believe that they are there at the beginning.
At the beginning.
I believe they're at the beginning. I'm going to tell you what I really believe. When the covenant is signed, and they start to build this edifice, which they're going to call the temple, these guys, I believe, are going to be standing outside prophesying against it, against what's happening, and calling people to salvation of Jesus. They're going to be hated by the world. They're going to be hated by the Jewish people. Their message is not going to be well received, because I earnestly believe that they will be prophesying against the rebuilding of that temple, because they know what's going to happen when it's rebuilt. It's not going to draw the people closer to God. It's going to draw them further away from God. Jesus is the only way to be drawn closer to God. These are prophets of God. They'll be speaking about Jesus. And they will not be accepted either by the world system or by the Jewish system, in the same way that the Old Testament prophets and Jesus himself was not welcomed by the Jewish people, because he called them to faith in God through him. That makes sense to you? So I think they're going to step on the scene. God's going to bring on the scene right at the beginning. Several things are going to happen right at the beginning. 144,000 are going to be called out. The two witnesses are going to be brought forth. The temple is going to start to be rebuilt. All this is going to be happening at the beginning. And it's going to last till the halfway point at least.
So the 144 and the two witnesses will both be preaching at the same time.
At the same time. But the witnesses are in Jerusalem, clearly at the right. temple site, where the 144,000 are worldwide. Any other questions? Those are important questions. All right. I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. So sackcloth means, listen, sackcloth means always grieving. There's nothing happy going on here. Israel has signed a covenant with the devil. How could that be a happy thing? Israel has sold themselves to the devil to get peace, I think, and also to get a rebuilt temple. How can that be a wonderful thing? And so when these prophets come by, nobody's going to like their message. Nobody. I always get this picture, even in some of the books that I've read, you know, you might read some of the Left Behind series, or you might see some of the movies, that almost like the Jews are happy that these Jewish guys are there doing it. They hate them. Their message will not be received by anybody. Everybody will want to kill them. Everybody will want to kill them. Okay? He says, and I will, verse 4, these are the two olive trees and a lampstand before the God of the earth. So, you want to know who they are? Let's go over to the book of Zechariah. And we've got to find the book of Zechariah. Now that's Zephaniah. There's Zechariah. Yeah. Okay.
Right before Malachi.
Yeah.
Well, that's clear as mud. Thank you.
Well, Malachi's the last one.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, that's true. Go to chapter 4. Now remember what John says. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. So, chapter 4, look at verse 2. And he said to me, what do you see? So I said, I am looking, and there is a lampstand of solid gold, and a bowl on top of it, and on the seven on the stand seven lamps with seven pipes and to the seven lamps. Two olive trees are by it, one at the right of the bowl and the other to the left. Where do you see the lampstand? Well, you see it in the temple. Okay, I think he's describing the candlestick, the lampstand in the temple, the two olive trees that are standing beside it are these two witnesses. Zechariah is speaking of right here. Okay? The two olive trees are by it, one on the right side of the bowl and the other on the left side of the bowl. Go down to verse 11. And then I said, said to him, what are these two olive trees? One at the right of the lampstand and one is on the left. And I further answered and said to him, what are these two olive branches that dip into the receptacles, the two gold pipes from which the golden oil drains? Then he said to me, do you not know what these are? And I said to him, no, my Lord. He said, these are the two anointed ones, okay, who stand beside the Lord of the whole earth. Now, isn't it interesting that he says these are the two, and back in Revelation chapter 4, he says these are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before, that same terminology, the God of the earth. Okay? So Zechariah prophesied about these two. Zechariah would never see these two, nor would the Israelite people that Zechariah was prophesying to would ever see these two. But now we have their appearance. Okay? Scripture interprets Scripture. So what do we know about these two? Biblically, what do we know about these two? Okay? We know that they are anointed of God. They are prophets. They have clearly the power, we're going to see, they have clearly the power of the Old Testament prophets, which I think drives people to a place of conjecture, that since they did things that Elijah and Moses did, that they must be Elijah and Moses. Other things that drive people to that conjecture is they say, well, Elijah never died, and they want to tell us Moses never died, but they're wrong, because the Bible says that Moses died, and he was buried by God on Mount Nebo. So, that kind of doesn't fit there. So others will say, well, maybe one is Elijah, who was caught up in the whirlwind, and one is Enoch, who did not die, but he saw God. You know who I believe these two are? I believe there are two anointed witnesses of God that will come that day. I don't believe they're either Elijah, Moses, Enoch. I just don't. Elijah and Moses had their day. Okay? These are real human beings. Because they will die. Now some people say, well, the Bible says it's appointed for man once to die. And since Enoch and Elijah didn't die, it must be them. Well, I mean, that's jumping through a lot of hoops to get to this place. Where are they going to come from? Where have they been all this time? What do they look like? I mean, they're old. Anyway, I'm going to be careful there. Okay, so I guess my point is, God has always had His anointed ones or His witnesses, and He raises them up at the right time. So when I look at this, I say, Zechariah prophesied of these two anointed ones of God who are so close to God. They stand beside God, and really that stand beside God, some interpret that as they stand alone for God in all the earth. You get the picture there. Now of course you say, well, what about the 144,000? Yes, they're there, but these men have a special call of God, and they are standing in the most volatile place. They are standing alone for God in all the earth. because no one likes them. They're not there for the Jews, and they're not there for the Gentiles. They're there for God. And their message is pure, and their message is powerful, and their message is clean, and it calls all people to repentance, and nobody wants to repent. They just want to get their program done. Okay? So let's read on. By the way, so I guess that's kind of my view. You'll read other guys who will say, and they'll try to build a big case for them, and you know, they are who they are. Okay, but clearly they can do what those Old Testament prophets can do, which set them in, I would say, at least what I would say, they're certainly in the same class to stand like they do. Okay, look at verse 5. If anyone wants to harm them, fire proceeds from their mouth and devours their enemies. And if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. So what is going to happen to anybody who would desire to come and harm these two witnesses for the period of time that God has appointed? They'll be consumed by the fire of God. Someone said, "You believe that's literal?" I believe it's literal. I believe the fire of God will proceed from these men, and it will consume anybody who would try to even get near them, who would try to kill them, who would try to stop them. In other words, they have God's protective hand upon them, and nobody can touch them as long as God's protective hand's upon them. And that may be hard for us. We say, "Well, that's kind of hard for me to believe." Remember what's already happened. Ezekiel 38's already happened. Millions have died at the hand of God, not at the hand of Israel or the United States, but at the hand of God. They died. God brought, and here we have again where anybody who would come against them, God will kill them. They will not be able to touch them. I like what David Jeremiah said about this one passage right here, and he did a little quote. He said, "The man of God is invincible until he has completed the purpose for which God has set him out." And David Jeremiah tries to apply that to us, that we don't have to fear. God has appointed for us what God has appointed for us. And as long as God has a purpose for us and God is with us, there's nobody can touch us apart from God allowing that to happen. So you don't have to worry about it. And if God takes his hand off of you, your worry isn't going to do you any good anyway. So, again, I think it's a call for us to realize, you know what, we need to walk in humility, but we also need to walk in the boldness of Christ, always speaking the truth, never being ashamed of the word that God has given us and the call that God's put upon our life. This world desperately needs Christians who stand in the power of God today. Okay, these two men will, and they will be protected by God until that day happens. Verse 6 says, "They have the power to shut up heaven, so no rain falls on the days of their prophecy, and they have power over waters to turn them into blood and to strike the earth with all the plagues as often as they desire." Now, you know, when they do this, that's just going to make people madder. So if this happened in the first 3.5 years, we've already read through 6 trumpets and 7 seals the awful things that have happened. Add to that what these guys can do. Okay? And it may even answer some questions that most of the world not only will blame them for the things they do, but will probably blame them a lot for the things that are going to happen other than what they do. They'll get the blame for everything. They are so hated. Okay? Any questions on that before we move on?
Mary. Just a comment. Yeah. To ask you to rephrase. There still are some people alive on earth during this time who have come to know the Lord during the tribulation.
Yes.
And where they won't live very long, probably. But there are some people alive who will be observing these things.
Oh, yes. And by the way, I like that last part. Yes, there will be people alive. We don't know how long God will let people, new believers will be alive during the trip. Some may live a few years. Some may live a very brief time. The anger of the Antichrist is about to rise. And I think his anger really begins to rise at the midway point, too. Okay. He's building allegiances. He's the king of propaganda. We've talked about this. And the world is not as one, but he's putting forth the picture that the world is at one. And everyone will be able to observe this. The question many years ago was, you know, by those who wrote commentaries. How could the whole world see these two witnesses? How could they witness this like this? You know, how could they see these things happening? It's an impossibility. But we know today that that's commonplace. And how can you see it? You can see it. You know what? You can see instantaneously. You know, the Southern Baptist Convention is meeting right now. Did you know that? You can go on your smartphone.
Where is it?
They're meeting in Baltimore, I think it is. You can go on your smartphone, click on a link, and you can see them right now.
Wow.
What they're doing right now. Okay. So it's not just TV. It's computers. It's phones. It's iPads. It's everything. There's nothing that cannot be covered. And so we live in a time we know where the whole world can see this happening at the same time, while it's happening. I can imagine the commentators talking about these two guys. Well, we're back here, and these guys are here, and these loons, and you know, and they're responsible for everything. Our leader has told us they're responsible for everything. So we need to do everything we can to stop this. But people have tried, but for some reason they can't. Some things just keep happening. You know, they're not going to give them credit for anything. You can see the manipulation stuff going on. So, verse 7. Said, now when they had finished their testimony. Well, what's the length of their testimony? He's already told us that. It is the 1,260 days. When they had finished their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. So, at the halfway point, the beast that comes out of the bottomless pit. Well, who is the beast in the book of Revelation? The dragon is the devil. The false prophet, but there's one other. The beast is Antichrist. Now, who empowers the beast?
Satan.
Satan does. Okay? That's why he's described here as the beast that comes out of the bottomless pit. He's not moving in just merely man's power anymore. He's moving in the occult. He's moving in the paranormal. He does have power, and there is power in the occult. Don't be mistaken. There's a lot of charlatans out there that misuse it and do a show of it. But there are basically, as I understand biblically, three sources of power. Or three realms that we live in, let me put it that way. Most of us live in the natural. That's where we spend most of our time. We're restricted by natural laws. We can't do anything outside natural laws. And that's where we live as human beings. But there is the occult. The word I use for that, I don't call it supernatural. I call it paranormal or the occult. And it is real. And it's above the natural. And there are things that go on that reveal the reality of that power. That's where Satan dwells. That's the empowerment of Satan. Even today, but even more when this day comes. The third realm is the supernatural. That belongs to God and God alone. When a true miracle happens, it happens at a supernatural act of God. It's not a natural act. It's not a paranormal act. It's an act of God. Satan is not supernatural in that defining it this way. He does not have the power that God has. He's not supernatural. He is paranormal. He's beyond the normal, but he's not supernatural. Only God is supernatural. Okay? But please do not be mistaken. The things that Satan can do would amaze us, and it would look to us as supernatural. Paul warns us that what he would do a lot of lying signs and wonders, and he would deceive, if it were possible, even the elect in doing those lying signs and wonder, doing things that we would say, wow, only God could do something like that. And the truth is, it's not God, it is Satan. Okay, so here in verse 7, once again, we see that Antichrist, the beast, is going to raise his head. By the way, this will be another thing that will catapult him into God's status. Because no one has been able to touch these two witnesses for 3.5 years. And then all of a sudden, Antichrist comes in power at the perfect timing. And what's it say he does? He kills him. He kills them. Now, what happens to them after they kill them? It says this in verse 8. It says, and their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. Wow, that's those are pretty rough statements. Mm-hmm. Sodom, because of the debased nature and the sinful acts that are going on there. Egypt, because of the idolatry. Anytime you talk about Egypt, you're talking about idolatry. How many gods did Egypt have? Just, you know, so, yes.
Well, just this morning driving over here, I happened to have a radio on it, and it was station 550, which is a general news and so forth. Mm-hmm. And Tom Brokaw, you know, that radio person for years and years, fairly well respected. But this morning he was praising a certain coach of something. I can't remember. I'm not into sports. So whatever it is, this particular person is professional, but he just announced that he's gay. And Tom Brokaw was trying to actually give adulation to this coach, because this coach said, I don't care how he acts in his everyday life, all I know he's able to get the points for the whatever the team or whatever sport it is. Well, that just shows me that Tom Brokaw is putting sports as an idol. Because he doesn't care what his morality is.
Yeah, remember, these things which the Bible has condemned have all of a sudden become virtues.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like...
So, I don't know that Brokaw cares much about sports, but I think he sees the sports as a great platform to promote this this lifestyle.
And
he
wants to be politically correct.
Of course. Yeah.
I doubt that Tom Brokaw is homosexual himself.
Oh, no, I don't think he is either.
But he just wants, you know, he wants to be political.
That is a promotion today. These things have been turned into virtues, just like the prophet Isaiah said it would happen. You know, Al Mohler, who is the president of Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, one of our seminaries and stuff, and he wrote a great article on the church. The church is going to have to decide very quickly. And one of the things he said, there's no magical third place for the church to dwell in. The church has to say, we're coming to a place where you have to say yes or you have to say no, and those are going to have to be clarified. Not clarified, because the pressure is about to come. In Hawaii, if your church uses the facilities for any public purpose, then the law requires you to use it for any public purpose that's wanted, which means they don't make the pastors do ceremonies, but if the buildings are used for public purposes, the government says you cannot keep homosexuals from using your building, which is just nuts. Private property laws are just, it's just, anyways, but we live in crazy times, folks, so hang on.
So when our facility was used for voting, that would put it in that.
That would put it in that category for them.
Yeah, right.
There'll be snow falling in July before they have one of those weddings happen here. So,
would you care to have that article put in the upcoming newsletter issue?
Oh,
from this.
From Dr. Mohler. Yeah, let me write myself a note and I'll put it in there.
I'd like to read it. And I bet a lot of people would.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you. Yeah. Yes.
I'm so upset because when my brother died, we got his house, and a man came and he wanted to buy it, and he was so interested, and we couldn't understand, and he kept raising the price, and the realtor said, we can't do anything. If he has the money and he wants to pay for it, then, and my son, he didn't know. Well, now this guy is a Muslim. And you know what they've done? They've taken this house, and my friend called me that lives about a block away, and she said, they built a whole upstairs on the second floor. There's an apartment in the basement, there's an apartment on the first floor, and on the upstairs they built all this. They've made it so different. They put a beautiful porch across the front of the house and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is a Muslim. And I wonder if it's going to be a church.
Well, Won't be a church, might be a mosque.
You can't do anything.
No, you can't do anything. And the point is, the world is changing, guys. So we got to remain to what we know is right. So, all right. So their dead bodies lie in the street, the great city, which spirits are called Sodom and Egypt. By the way, that's a defilement to the Jews. Dead bodies lying in the streets. So, okay. And if you don't know, I love this. He's not going to leave you wondering what when he says that great city is Sodom and Egypt, and he's going to make clear the, where our Lord was crucified. So where is it? It's Jerusalem. Okay. All right. It says that then those from the peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their bodies to be put in the grave. So how are all these people going to see them? Well, we know. John couldn't have known. But we know. They're just going to leave them there. And you know, it's like when we have a thunderstorm in Arizona. You think the world's changing. We got the strangest news, people. You know, the first 15 minutes is that we had a storm. Really?
Yeah.
Or this really gets me. Channel 10 will have that one show, American Idol, on. And when the winner of American Idol wins, then the next 30 minutes is news about the American Idol winner. Now, how is that news? They won a talent contest.
Yeah, exactly.
What a world we live in. So anyway, we are so dumbed down to this stuff.
They bury their death even the same day.
The same day. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they will all see this, and they will enjoy this. Those same newscasters are saying we don't know what to do about it. I'm sure we'll be standing outside saying, look how wonderful this is. Our world leader has taken care of our problem. And these people who were so cruel to us now, they deserve to be laying out there and treated in such a manner as this. Verse 9 then says, verse 10, and those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them. See how they're reacting? Rejoice over them. Make merry and send gifts to one another. Because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. So, this is going to become not a national holiday. It will become, not for very long, by the way, but it will become a worldwide holiday. I mean, this will be bigger than Christmas. They're going to give gifts to each other. They're going to throw parties. What I guarantee is going to happen is the world, Antichrist, is going to step forward and say, I've taken care of your problem. And most people will say something like this. We've gone through 3.5 years of all these plagues and all these stuff. And they put the blame not on God so much, but on these guys. Because remember what it says they could do. And even though they didn't make a lot of those things happen, because God was doing that, they'll put the blame on these guys. And their initial thing, I guarantee you, will be this. No more of this stuff. It's over. And our world ruler has set us free from this. What a wonderful guy he is. We will give him anything, even our worship. And something is about to happen to these two guys, but we'll wait till next week to look at that.
Okay.
Sandy.
All the seals are finished, and all the trumpets, the six trumpets are
Six trumpets are done. Yeah. At the time they're killed.
Right.
Remember, what we read this morning starts at the beginning and goes to the halfway point.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly. Right?